97.9 FM, WCHL, and chapelboro.com present The Art of Potential, an illuminating talk show dedicated to getting your community educated, hired, and inspired. The Art of Potential combines real-world knowledge and expertise aimed at helping our community reach their full potential. Now, The Art of Potential on 97.9 FM, WCHL.
Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra with the Art of Potential show. Thank you so much for joining us. We have an absolutely amazing show in store for you today. I'm so, so excited about the show. So let me tell you what it's about. I have three amazing guests, and we are going to be talking about a topic that is going to happen with everyone, and we are going to be talking about death and dying and crossing over. So my panel of guests is amazing. We're going to start with Pam Tillett. She is with the Orange County Department of Aging. She is their aging transition social worker. And we're going to be talking about the different religions, how they view death. We're going to be talking about what happens when a person dies. And then we have Sheila Evans with us. And Sheila has just recently lost her husband. And she's going to be talking about what we go through when we lose someone. And then in the second part of the show, John Edward is going to join us. He is a psychic medium. He has been all over Oprah. He's read for the Kardashians. I mean, the guy has it going on. And he's going to be in Raleigh in July. But he's going to be talking to us about what happens when they cross over to the other side. So absolutely fascinating show in store for us. Thank you for joining us. So let's get started. Welcome, ladies. I have Pam and Sheila with me right now. How are you all today?
We're doing great.
Thank you
very much for having us.
Very excited about this. So let's just jump right in. What I want to talk about, and Pam, I'm going to throw this question to you. I want to talk about how different religions view death.
Okay. Well, last winter, we had a series of discussions at the Seymour Center on death and dying, and we had a panel of people representing different faith traditions, and they came and told us about their beliefs about dying and the afterlife. We had a Muslim, a Jew, a Buddhist, a Catholic, and a woman representing Chinese people that didn't have a faith, but they had a cultural belief system. And it was fascinating to listen to each one of these people talk and discover that when we began, I thought that it would be very different, stark differences between the religion. And what I found was there were more similarities than there were differences.
So what would a Muslim person, how would they view the dying process?
Well, the Muslim people feel it's very important to be buried.
Okay.
Within 24 hours. And, you know, that was contrast with Jewish people and Tibetan people with their sky burials. So there was many different customs and many different ways.
Well, okay. So I want to know what a sky burial is.
Okay, a Tibetan sky burial. I think everybody should go look that up on the internet. I really don't want to frighten anyone. It is their tradition in Tibet to put a person up on a pier, a wooden pier, and then the birds pick the body apart, so nothing is left afterwards.
Okay.
So they don't have to bury anyone. They don't have to cremate anyone. You know, it's just done.
I would assume that they put that person far away from civilization, because I would think that could be a rather messy and smelly process of returning to nature, if you will.
Yes. I think you're right about that.
So when the person crosses over, do all the religions, first of all, feel like there's a separation of the body and the spirit moves on? Is there any of the people that you talked to who felt like this was it, and you're alive, and then you die, and bam, that's, you know, the whole story?
Well, it's very interesting because different people really did believe in different things in that regard. Like the woman who was talking about the Chinese culture had a fascinating discussion about their belief in reincarnation, but it wasn't attached to a god.
Okay.
So that was very different.
That is very different. So you just reincarnate, but there's no sense of a higher being kind of directing the process or anything. It's just that your soul comes back. Now, is there reincarnation person to person? Is it person to animal?
That's a really good question. I don't know that.
Okay.
But animals certainly are nice. I've always thought I'd love to come back as a bird or a fish or something.
Now, Sheila, it's my understanding that you are familiar with the Jewish belief system when it comes to crossing over.
Yes, I am. My husband, Seth, was Jewish, and he died in December. And so what we did is, first of all, he needed to be buried and not cremated, but in a pine box. So I had arranged that ahead of time, which is why it's so important to know what you're doing ahead of time and have these discussions. And then the most helpful part of the Judaism rituals is that we sat what they call Shiva for a week after he died. And what that means is you essentially stop your normal life as you know. You don't go to work, you don't do the dishes, you don't clean your house, and you honor the person and think about the person that has died. And that gives you time not only to honor him, but also to get yourself ready to go on with your life. Because the whole process of grieving is a process you do need to go through.
Right.
And not push aside. And taking that week out really helps you really feel the grief and gradually be able to move on and pick up your life, which has changed, of course. It's never quite the same.
No, I would imagine not. And that's kind of a concentrated way of doing it, it seems to me, because I know just in watching people go through the grieving process, and we'll talk about this in a moment, but it always strikes me as it comes through in waves. It's kind of like, you know, you've got it together and then suddenly you don't at all.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's what I'm finding myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I find is helpful for me is I go back and I do a ritual. I light a candle almost every day.
Oh, wonderful.
And I have pictures out that of my husband so that I can talk to him and think about it. And so some days you are in the normal process of life, and other days you're back into that grieving and that thinking about him and that wondering what you're going to do next without this person in your life.
So let's talk a little bit about what happens when someone crosses over. Because Sheila, you just went through and observed this whole thing.
Yes.
And Pam, you said that there are some basic changes that lead to death. What are those?
Well, the body changes, and these changes happen in all deaths. Your pulmonary system is unable to get enough oxygen, which affects your cardiovascular system. Your heart can no longer pump well enough to circulate the blood. When you can't circulate the blood, it leads to organ failure. The sensation is lost first in your legs, then it's lost in your arms. Your pulse becomes weak and irregular, and that is a sign that death is near. Kubler-Ross talks about the dying person seeing and hearing what's only visible to just them.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so...
And touch. Touch is the last thing that goes.
So oh, wow.
And touch. And at the very end, you know, being able to discern touch is diminished.
Right. Okay, well, that's fascinating, because I think about just in the process of watching my grandfather pass, he lost his appetite. Mm-hmm. Like, suddenly yes. He was not hungry. Is that also very common?
It's very common, and it's rather shocking how long someone can go
right.
without eating.
With minimal food. Right.
Or without drinking.
Yeah.
I've been shocked how long people can go without any fluids.
So when you are seeing someone moving in that stage, they may lose the desire to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then it sounds like do they feel like they're gasping for air? Like, is that one of the things? Because I think, you know, I see a lot of old folks, and I'm sure people around town do too, with the oxygen masks on. And,
mm-hmm.
and my grandmother had that. She was a smoker, though, too. So I know that played a part in it.
Well, I realize that people have that fear that they're not going to be able to breathe, and that's
yeah.
a scary, scary
oh,
thing.
Yeah.
yet, you know, there is a actually some kind of reason for the in death that all these things happen with getting less oxygen as it goes along, and it closes down the brain and the brain's ability to feel. So watching it,
oh, interesting,
is much more difficult than actually being the person.
Oh, wow. Okay, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Sheila about that process as well as the stages of grief. You are listening to The Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. We will be right back. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemster with the Art of Potential Show. We have an absolutely amazing show going on right now. We are talking about death and dying. We have experts from all over the field. We have Pam Tillett. She is with the Orange County Aging Center, and she is, or the Orange County Department of Aging, and she has been working with the aging population in the area. We also have Sheila Evans, who has just lost her husband, and she's talking about the grieving process from that aspect. And then in the second half of the show, in the next segment, we are going to open with John Edward, who is the psychic medium, and he's going to talk about what happens when someone crosses over to the other side. So absolutely fascinating show. So we were just wrapping up, and Pam, you were talking about how the body shuts down and all the systems shut down in order so the brain can't feel as it goes through the process. And Sheila, why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience?
I certainly will. My husband had dementia, and he was sick for 4 years, and I took care of him at home, and I was lucky enough to be able to have him with hospice at home, and he died actually in my arms. And I think it's a wonderful point that Pam made about touch and hearing, because although a dying person can't tell you and often can't talk, they can hear your voice. So if you continue to talk to them right to the end, mm-hmm. and touch them and pat them, and that they feel those things. And it's good for us to remember that, that they are still aware that you are there, and yeah. that you are loving them and trying to help them through that last process.
And I'm just going to second that, because I happen to know in the second segment we talk more about the dementia, and John Edward will get into that. And the same message, you know, just be there to the end. Just because they're mentally not aware doesn't mean that they're in spirit not very aware of what's going on.
Exactly. Yes. And it's very helpful if before the person dies, before the person gets sick, that you're able to talk out with them. Now, what do I want if I do get sick? What do I want extraordinary measures?
Right.
Do I want, if I'm unable to eat, that happened with my husband, do I want a feeding tube? No, I do not. Do I want IV therapy? That kind of thing. All those conversations to try and have before a person is unable to speak or unable to express what they would want when they are dying.
And I would second that and say, make sure you have everything in writing, because having gone through a different family situation where the person's wishes were not honored because all the I's weren't dotted and the T's weren't crossed.
Exactly.
So do make sure to get that in writing.
Exactly.
Particularly, and I'm just going to, in my family situation, it was a stroke that caused significant brain damage. Never would have foreseen it coming, but because all those pieces weren't in place, it was just not what the person would have wanted. So let's talk about the stages of grief, Pam, because it's interesting. So tell us a little bit about Elizabeth Kubler-Ross and the grieving process.
Okay. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross is a fascinating person.
Mm-hmm.
She was a doctor, and she grew up in Europe, and she just always had the eyes to see and the ears to hear about people who were suffering and how to try to alleviate that suffering. But when she talks about the five emotional stages of death, she listed them in a certain order, and I don't think they necessarily have to go in that order, but it's denial. No, this can't be happening to me. Anger, why does this happen to me? Why is this happening to me? Bargaining, yes, but I'll give you $1 million, God, just don't make me die right now. Depression, this is really happening to me. It's not happening to anybody else. It's me. And acceptance, finally. Everyone has to die. Death is a part of life.
And I think you're right that they don't always go in that order, and you go back to some of the stages,
yeah.
or you'll repeat stages, and it's not a clear process. It's really up and down.
Are these stages paralleled with the person who's with them? So in other words, if one person is saying, denial.
You're asking if the loved one that
right.
is with the person dying,
yeah.
if they're going through these stages of grief as well.
Yep.
Yes, but maybe not the same ones.
Right. right.
And it's very interesting, grief. You know, there's the grief before the event, during the event, and after the event.
Exactly.
So it's very different for each individual how they ebb and flow throughout these stages.
You know, and I'm going to have Sheila talk about this in a minute, but it's so interesting to me. If you look at our society and you look at some of the big headline news stories when someone passes on, if the person is not grieving appropriately, there's a whole set of internal judgment that happens against this person of you are not grieving, so therefore maybe you are guilty of, causing this person to pass, or maybe you weren't really attached to him. It's very interesting that way to see how that process is played out. Like, we have an expectation that when someone you love passes on, that you will move into a grief state. And, it will come and go. So, Sheila, can you tell us a little bit about what that process has been like for you?
Well, I thought I was better prepared for the loss of my husband. I took care of him, as I told you, for 4 years with
right.
dementia. So I watched him change from a vibrant professor to someone who couldn't talk, couldn't eat, could not really take care of himself in any way. So I had those years to prepare myself, and then when he died, I thought I would be ready, and I wasn't ready. And that was very, very unusual. I wasn't ready for that. And so what I'm finding is sitting Shiva, taking that time off, that was helpful. What actually has been the most helpful thing for me is the reading that I've done and understanding that a person that grieves needs to do it their own way.
Mm-hmm.
And you mustn't let someone tell you, well, you should be over it now, or it's been 2 weeks, Sheila, so you should be fine, that kind of thing. Everyone does it differently. Everyone does it in their own way, and each way is perfectly fine. And if you can sort of hold on to that, I am okay. I'm doing it right because it's right for me. It feels right for me. So if I'm lighting a candle every day for the next year,
yep.
that's fine. And
yep.
somebody else might say, oh, no, you only do that in the first 7 days, that kind of thing. So I think that's been the greatest thing that I've learned, the permission to do it my way and on my timetable.
That, and you bring up such an important thing, to honor what's going on in your own process.
Yes.
And not to feel like you have to, hit a benchmark. Right.
Yeah.
Do it by the book.
Yes.
I would also think when you have a loss, there's a redefinition of yourself that mm-hmm. has to happen.
That's right.
And Pam, can you tell us a little bit about that and what you see?
Well, what's interesting is we have support groups at the Seymour Center and Central Orange Senior Center. And it's been a very supportive, intimate environment for people to be able to talk to each other about these different stages and about how they're grieving. Some of the people in the groups are just beginning their journey
mm-hmm.
as a caregiver. Some of the people in the groups have lost their loved ones. So it's a place where you can feel totally safe and that you have complete confidentiality, and you can talk
nice.
This out
right.
and realize in talking to other people and sharing with other people really allay so many fears.
It would, and you don't feel stupid for asking the
right.
question, and it's
everyone is going through a similar path, not the same way.
Right.
But the lack of judgment in a group is just so freeing for people to be able to express themselves.
No, it is. And I remember just with my mom when her father was passing, and he just did some things, and eventually she would just have to laugh because, you know, he would hit the remote control and wonder why the seat he was in wasn't adjusting to the way he wanted it to, you know, and it was the television remote. And she just had to let go of, you know, some of that and just kind of be present and, you know, kind of keep it moving.
Yeah. So.
And the idea of laughing is so very helpful and so healing during this whole process. For you, for the person that's dying, for the person that's grieving, it's really helpful.
It's important in these discussions to make the subject of death be more normalized and to talk about death in context of love and not fear. That's what we're trying to do. Open a discussion so people can see this in a totally new light.
Well, I would like to thank you ladies very much for joining us. And we have coming up in July, a fireside chat. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Sheila?
Yes, I certainly can. Pam and I are going to lead that at both the Seymour Center and the Orange County Central Central Senior Center. And it's really just helping people to talk about the importance of having these discussions on dying and what we want and what we don't want and what are your fears and what are your questions. And really it's for anyone, which is all of us, who is going to be facing death.
Wonderful. Thank you for listening. This has been the Art of Potential Show with Kristen Heemstra. I will also have information about this on my website, artofpotential.com. Hi, this is Kristen Heemstra. Welcome back to the Art of Potential Show. So this is the second half of the show, and in the first half, we heard from Pam talking about what happens when people die and when you are around them. And then for the second half of the show, we are very excited. We have John Edward with us. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me.
We are so excited to have you. Just for those of you who don't know who John Edward is, it's not the politician that we all know from North Carolina. John is a psychic medium. He's been on Oprah. He's been on Larry King. He's been on Ellen. He's been written up. You've been written up all over the place for your ability to connect with people who have crossed over. And so we have some questions for you. We've just heard a little bit about how different religions perceive of dying and death. We've heard about the stages of grief and what people experience when they die. So, John, here's my question to you. When people cross over, what is their experience?
I think the journey is kind of individual, and it's different for the person that's leaving because of the life that they just led. So not to make this really, really complicated, but like when my grandmother passed, she was 93 years old. She was an Italian-American Catholic from Long Island, New York. And I'm sure her perspective of what the afterlife or heaven would be is going to be very different from a same 93-year-old woman who might have passed in a village in Africa who was not Catholic, who did not expect to see St. Peter and Jesus at the at the pearly gates. So I think that our perspective of the life that we just lived, our belief system, will shape some of that. So I like to look at it as we're all flying into the same airport, but we might be flying in through different airlines. And on that airline, they might speak a different language. But eventually, we're going to have to clear customs and immigration. We're going to have to pick up our bags to uncheck them so we get rid of our baggage.
Right.
And we have to kind of like learn from the life that we just lived. So I think that that kind of is the similarity that people will experience. But how it plays out for people, I think, is very unique. I believe that we meet up with our friends and family who have gone on before us. I believe that we have a team of spirit guides that work with us during this lifetime. So I think that there's a pretty intense, multi-layered, pretty cool dimensional experience of recovery or kind of connecting again with the soul when it's the right time for that person to leave.
So when you say we uncheck our baggage, is some of that unchecking dumping our religion and kind of moving past our religion into a different frame of reference?
Well, you know, I'm a little controversial when I say this, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but I do like to be really, really direct. I think that what we do is we assimilate, absorb the lessons that religions in general are supposed to teach us.
And right.
The one thing that I like people to kind of hold on to is their faith. And I think that the one thing that everybody can really, really understand is that faith is free, but religion we pay for. So if you build your life throughout your life and have faith and have that foundation that you're walking upon, it doesn't matter what the language of that
right.
faith kind of is, you know, and I'm a recovering Catholic myself, but my daughter just made her first Holy Communion because that's the language that we speak as a family.
Right.
But if my wife was Jewish and she was more into her faith than I was into mine regarding the organization of it.
Right.
And the grammatically correctness of speaking it, I would raise my child with Judaism.
Right.
My feeling is I think it's important to have a language
yes.
or some type of amplification of that faith. So I don't think we really shed it. I think we just kind of mine for the nuggets of what the religion is supposed to teach us.
That makes total sense to me. In another way I heard it explained what also kind of worked for me is that a religion is like a software package, but the computer is God. It was just, for some reason, that really resonated with me.
Exactly.
So someone could be running Word, someone...
Exactly.
Yeah. That definitely works. So I have a question about... when people arrive, I've had a friend who recently, her son committed suicide, and she is also a Catholic, and she is trying to reconcile her religion with this fear that her son is never going to be able to connect again because of the way that he took his own life.
No, and, that's not accurate.
Right, and I think I was just going to ask you to speak to that, because I think there are a lot of folks who are concerned about that.
Okay, so the first thing I always have to address when it comes to suicide is that in general, as a concept or as an option, it's not one. I tell people that suicide is not an option. It's not something that people should consider on some level. That therapy and working through the issues that we have here are more significantly important than trying to escape them. Why do I say that? Well, after 30 years of doing this, if there's going to be one consistent message attached to suicide that I can actually come and mine for, like, I got to tell you, it's that they all let me know, like, we didn't escape anything.
Right.
Doing that. So it's like we basically still have to deal with the same things, but we're dealing with it on a different level. And it's actually quite easier to deal with those issues here in the physical body, classroom of life. But those energies can and do come through. Now, I know that there are various spiritual leaders, various mediums, various, you know, faiths, and they have, you know, made statements that kind of try to scare people to stay here and not do that. That's not my way of thinking, because I think free will exists, and I think that people who are going to do that are going to do that, and that if somebody does that, we have to give them that as their responsibility. In other words, like if somebody did that, looking at the intention of why they did that needs to be looked at, meaning was it a real suicide, or was this person manically depressed or bipolar? Was there some type of physiological or mental challenge or health issue? Now, you know, mental illness.
Right.
Is health-based. That's now, to me, no different than cancer.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of different things to look at, and we can't just put an umbrella over the word suicide. But to answer your question, yes, they do come through, and yes, they're allowed to come through. And I think the one thing that's really important is prayer.
Okay, so advice to people who are grieving the loss of a child or someone they love through suicide is to pray for them, for healing on the other side for them?
I think my first thing is to give them the responsibility. Like, make sure that the person who's left behind...
That's a tough one, yeah.
...isn't assuming the responsibility that they could have stopped it. Because I can tell you that that's not something that I've ever... I don't think I've ever said this out loud, but in the 3 decades of doing this, I don't think I've ever had somebody come through and say, you could have stopped this. Like, I don't think I've ever said that. I don't think I've ever had somebody make me feel that way.
Right.
I've never had that energy come through. So I know, and, you know, I've worked with a lot of therapists talking about this, and the responsibility and the grief and the power of the weight of what's left behind, the magnitude of that, the reverberation, it is huge. And it goes out for generations to come after. And I think it's really important for the family that's left behind, specifically if a parent has lost a child, in general, if a parent loves child suicide, if there are other kids in the family, those other kids can't grow up in the shadow of that experience.
That's a good point.
They can't.
Right.
Because it almost gives so much energy to it.
Right.
That it kind of looks enticing for the other child because mom and dad's energy is so focused on that child and that child's actions. And they no longer hear anymore. And I'm like standing right in front of you. So what do I need to do to get your attention? So I think really making sure that people own the responsibility when they do that, regardless of their intentions or not, that allows the person here to free themselves to grieve and to free themselves to actually get into the energetic healing for both sides, for the person who passed and for the family that's left behind.
Is there a way, so in this specific example, can the son learn from the mother as he's, I'm assuming there's a way that he can see her in some form or fashion. So what would that look like?
What would it look like? I think it would look like how a reality show looks like. I jokingly say sometimes during my events that, you know, I'm not a fan of reality shows because I don't really think that they're real. And I think that people like watch them because they are, you know, voyeuristic and they want to plug themselves in and imagine what it would be like if that was my life. They either escape their life or they laugh at it. But whatever it is, there's some type of escapism that people suspend their, you know, their belief or disbelief of what they're viewing. But the real reality show is our everyday lives and our loved ones and friends watching from, you know, the world of spirit, tuning in and seeing what's coming up on our timeline. So I think they get a chance to watch the reality show of our lives. So, you know, we are keeping up with the Kardashians of the other side for our friends and family. And the same way the viewer on the couch can't really change the show.
Right.
They get a chance to view it. So they get a chance to be moved by it. They get a chance to experience it. And then as a result of that, they can evolve. So if somebody on the other side sees that their family is really pulling themselves together, working on staying physically healthy, working on staying emotionally, spiritually, and mentally healthy, that they're kind of moving through it. I mean, we never get over it. We never get over anything. We have to honor it to get through it. That they're doing that, I think that can be very, very helpful and therapeutic for the energy on the other side.
That is great to know, and it also gives a little bit of hope to those who are working through some of this stuff, that even if you don't feel like you can do it for yourself, maybe you're doing it for someone else who's watching you.
Can't do it for, but you can do it with.
That's
you know, I use this as the example. When my mom was healing, well, not healing, when my mom was terminally ill with cancer, while we were kind of working through that, I remember coming out of my bedroom and she was walking with a therapist and she came around the corner and she looked at me and she smiled and she goes, "Johnny, I'm going to beat this." And I went, "Good." She goes, "I'm going to beat this for you." And as soon as she said those words, in my mind, I buried my mother because if she wasn't beating it for herself, there was no way she could possibly beat it.
Wow, very profound. We're going to take a break right now, and when we come back, we are going to talk more with John Edward about what it's like when you cross over. You are listening to the Art of Potential show on WCHL. Welcome back. This is Kristen Heemster with the Art of Potential show, and I am talking with psychic medium John Edward. Some of you may have seen him on his television show, Crossing Over. I think, John, you've also connected with the Kardashians and a lot of other famous people. I'm sure you've done private readings as well. And so, one of the things I also want to mention is you are going to be here in Raleigh, and you are coming on July 14th. And so, if people want to go see you in person, they can check out the Art of Potential website. They can go to johnedward.net, and you can get tickets to see him, which looks like an amazing experience.
Thank you.
Yeah, that should be fun. So we were just talking about what it's like when people cross over. In particular, we spent some time on suicide. One of the other questions I have, John, is what about people who are in a coma or, you know, have dementia or some of these other altered mind situations going on where they're not really present in living as we would consider it to be?
It's funny you should ask me that question today, because yesterday I was listening to a satellite radio station, and there was a famous doctor call-in show that was on, and they were talking about a situation very similar to that, and the doctor basically said, you know, your mother's dead, move on, go live your life, you know, stop going to see her and stop spending your time, you know, go there, drop flowers off, you know, kiss her on the forehead and go back and live your life. And I had to pull over because I was trying to call into the show and be like, wait a minute, hold up, like, hold on here, not accurate. So if somebody's in a coma, if somebody's dealing with dementia or Alzheimer's, they are on a soul level still connected to that person. That is still who, that is still your mother, that is still your father, that is still your grandmother. Now, if they are in a nursing home or if they're being well taken care of, you know, I'm good with that. But for the person that's here, I think it's important for them to be able to still maintain their level of relationship with that person while they're physically still here, not to just stick them in the corner and then move on and feel like, well, they're dead already. They're not. They're still here, and they're here for a reason. And that reason might not be ever known to us until we get to the other side. But if somebody's got Alzheimer's, dementia, senility, all of that,
right,
all the memories and experiences, the conversations are etched on the hard drive of their soul. And when they get there, they get that full consciousness back. So all of that might be diseases of the physical body. But imagine a car, and the soul is the driver. If the car's got four flat tires and it can't move, but the consciousness is the driver sitting inside the car, it's the same thing. It's the person, like your family member, comes over to the car, looks at the car, and then just ignores you while you're inside it. So important to keep your relationship up with folks that are on that level. I always tell people, talk to them as if they could talk back to you, but can't.
Well,
communicate with them because I think it's important for you.
Right, and it would help your healing process too, I would think.
Sure.
Just in your preparation for when they do cross, say things. That makes sense. Next question I have is regarding karma. And I'm actually just going to open that up and let you talk about it for a minute. Can you explain to us what karma is and how it is impacted when you cross over?
Okay, so a lot of people, you know the word karma. They know the word to mean an eye for an eye, or they think about it in those terms. I like to use the word pattern, because our karma is an accumulation of patterns, of lessons that we've kind of created in this lifetime. I also believe that we've brought it in from other lifetimes as well. And we choose to kind of go into the classroom of life where other people are working towards similar lessons, kind of like a tumbler and a lock, or a lock and a key. And all these things have to kind of come together to give us the opportunity to participate in that class using our free will. So karma would be the patterns or lessons that we are experiencing in this lifetime. The choices we make create new assignments or new lessons. And a lot of the people that are in our circle, family members and friends, are working through similar or uniquely odd coincidental kind of similarities in lessons. And you'll see that in families. If you look at generations, you can see how lessons get passed down or experiences. I address this in one of my development books where I talk about we have our DNA, which is our kind of, you know, our genetic material that create who we are, and that's why we become the way we are, like our parents or like our grandparents and our genealogy. But then we have an energetic DNA, and I think that's where karma comes in. And that energetic DNA plays out for us, but I do believe in free will, and we have choices.
Well, and so then that kind of goes back to where in our last segment we were talking about people who have crossed over can still learn from you, and you can still learn from your parents with that energetic DNA. And I would have thought that you would incarnate with somebody who already knew the lesson you were trying to learn so that you could learn it from them. It's interesting.
Well, kind of like, you know, I think life is like a video game in so many ways. That, you know, you play the game, and then you get your high score, and then you go, I want to do that again. So you play the game again, and you play the game again, and you keep trying to better your score. So if you think about that, you keep trying to better your score and start over. And I think from a video game standpoint, it's a very simplistic way of looking at achievement.
So you want to continue to better yourself. And I would imagine some of that. Can you talk for a moment about self-correction and how that plays into bettering your score?
Self-correction, I think, for a lot of people, again, I feel like I'm going to be like, you know, I don't want to get like hate tweets when I say this, is not something that a lot of people like to do. I think it takes a very special person to be able to recognize that they've made a mistake and really own it. Now, I'm not saying people don't do that, but
right.
I've sat with so many people over the last 30 years that repeat and repeat and repeat and repeat the same situation over and over again. So I think if more people would kind of go within, if more people would take the time to learn about who they are and what their karma is, then they would actually stop doing that. So that brings to the next place. So they go, well, that's easy for you because you do this. And I said, no, it's easy for everybody if they have their astrological chart done. If you have your astrological chart done, it shows a snapshot of where you were on the planet, where the celestial bodies that were moving around, these archetypes kind of show what our lessons are for this incarnation. And you can really, really learn a lot about who you are and what you're doing and what you're moving through and what your lessons are and how to do that. And if somebody really is serious about self-correction, that's where I point them.
Which is interesting because I got to say, you pointed that same direction in the last interview we did together, and you mentioned getting your daughter's chart done and having one of her lessons was about rejection. I remember that so clearly.
Yep.
So you were having her do auditions. So
yep.
She, yeah, I do. That was, all right, we have just a couple more minutes left. What I would like to know from you are, what are the most common themes you get? What are, you know, are there common messages or themes that you get from people who have crossed over?
The common themes are love and the significance and the importance of love, communicating with the people while we're still here, not while the person's passed, making sure that people own their feelings and thoughts and words and honor who they are, like love of self. Very, very important for people to love themselves while they're here because they have to be able to love themselves before they can love somebody else. Very similar to when you're on the plane and they say put your oxygen mask on first before you help somebody else. You really have to take care of you and be the best you possible in order to have loving relationships with other people, whether they be romantic love or parental love or friendship love or sibling love, romantic love. It doesn't really matter. You have to really stay in balance. And I think that's what the big message is. If you have something to say to people, say it while you're here. Don't wait, because sometimes you don't get a second chance at that first opportunity. And that they want us to know that they are okay and that when we get there, we'll see them again. But until then, which will be a moment for them, a lifetime for us.
Right.
They want us to learn what we're supposed to learn while we're here.
So really, so love, and I just want to break this down a little bit more. Love is not just the feeling, it's an action. It's when you're loving, you're validating, you're communicating, you're in that space. Is it also when you say what you need to say, is that also some of the challenging messages? Because I always think, I shouldn't say that. That's not,
It's how you say it. My mom taught me a great lesson when I was a kid. I had a feeling about something in my family with one of my older aunts and uncles, and there was something that was bothering me. And I said to her, I really want to say this. And she looked at me, and I could tell by her expression she wasn't really thrilled.
Yeah.
But she said, you know what? As long as you speak your mind with respect, I will never have a problem. And I did. I addressed it. And I said, I just want you to know. And I added in as a child, I was like, with respect, because I thought that's what that meant.
Right.
I was like, I just want you to know,
right,
with respect, that this is how you made me feel. And then my aunt apologized to me because it wasn't her intention to make me feel that way. And it was something very silly. So ridiculously silly.
Right.
But to me as a child,
yep,
it was important. She asked me if I would play the piano for her. And I went, absolutely. So I went into the back room and she walked in behind me and I started playing. And about the time I was done, she had walked away.
Yep.
And it was something that I was like, well, wait a minute. You asked me to do it for you and I did it for you. And then like 2 minutes after I started playing, she like walked away. And it kind of festered for like a week. And then I finally said something to my mom. I was like, I'm never going to play for her again. And she said, well, why not look at it differently? Maybe the phone rang or maybe this. And I was like, no, she just walked away. And I addressed it. And my aunt apologized. So it taught me at an early age that, wow,
yep,
I was able to, with words and with respect,
yeah,
be able to express myself.
And own your feelings. That is,
yes,
great. And that's great for all kinds of counseling, not just this. It's great for this life as well as the next life. John, thank you so much for your time. Again, he is going to be in Raleigh. Amazing show. If you get a chance to see it, it's July 14th. You can go to the Art of Potential website. And John, your website is johnedward.net.
Correct.
Thank you for listening to the Art of Potential show with Kristen Heemstra.